I'm very happy to introduce to you Dr. Brad Braxton. He's a senior and founding pastor of the Open Church, a progressive congregation in West Baltimore. Dr. Braxton, who has pastored two congregations in Baltimore, holds a master's degree in theology from the University of Oxford, where he was a Rhodes Scholar. He also has served as a pastor at New York City's famed Riverside Church. And we're very happy to have Dr. Braxton on the program tonight to discuss many of the issues we've all been focusing on around the country in Baltimore. And Dr. Braxton, thank you so much for making the time to join us tonight.
I'm delighted to be with you.
As we begin, just say a word, if you would, about your interesting progressive congregation in West Baltimore, the Open Congregation, the Open Church that you work with.
Thank you very much. The Open Church is a relatively new congregation in the western part of Baltimore City. We are 4 years old, and fundamentally, we are a congregation committed to radically inclusive love, courageous social justice activism, and compassionate interfaith collaboration. We often say that we are a church on purpose. That is to say that we are taking an audacious stand for inclusion and for courageous moves that really do create justice and peace for all of God's children.
Well, thank you for that. I know we'll be sort of really talking about some of the nuts and bolts work that you're doing at the church that relates to the recent riots and peaceful demonstrations and all the rest of it. But I thought at the outset here, Dr. Braxton, I'd ask you for your overall impression of what's happening in Baltimore. Someone who knows the city quite well, I wondered if you would talk about the response we've seen to the death of Freddie Gray, who died in police custody, and the peaceful protests as well as the riots that have erupted in response to that tragic death.
Absolutely. Thank you for that invitation to reflect more deeply. I think what we have seen in these last few weeks, and especially with last week's uprising, is the need for many communities in our country, Baltimore simply being one of them, to have a more complex and nuanced conversation about the multiple dimensions of violence. Now, we certainly know that violence is at the center of this. It's a young African-American man. He could be of any ethnicity. So ultimately, we must also be mindful that we're talking about the issues of the use of state power, state force, on any particular community. But there seems to be a particular concentration right through in here these last few years as it relates to the African-American community, both women and men. So it's not just an African-American male issue. And there are many communities saying, let's have a serious conversation about violence. What about the subtle but nonetheless real manifestations of violence that have to do with public policies that cut off large sections of communities from resources and opportunities? So I often say there's a form of violence that might be lethal injection, right? The death penalty, state-sponsored violence. But rarely do we talk in this country about the violence of suffocating poverty. And so many people have been saying, why are these young people acting this way and this looting and the burning? And not that anyone would in any way want to endorse violence. The question is, can we endorse a more sophisticated conversation about the multiple ways that communities experience violence?
Thank you for that, Dr. Braxton. I think an important response to the unrest, the uprising, the peaceful protests from people in Baltimore and from all over the country who've risen up to say enough. Is the issue of poverty front and central. And I wondered, as you look at the situation in Baltimore, I know the Harbor area is quite famed for having been redeveloped. It's a tourist attraction of some import. But what is going on in places like West Baltimore, where your church is, and where a lot of this unrest and demonstrations have occurred? What is going on in these neighborhoods that the rest of America is really not aware of?
In a word, and this is the word I've been using a lot in my public conversations and even in my own congregation and trying to provide framework, and that is the word nihilism, which simply means a philosophy or worldview of nothingness. When the system betrays you over and over and over again, and when you see that, in fact, Lady Justice is not nearly as blind as she is said to be, and when you see that certain people can commit certain kinds of crimes and they get off, and others commit much lesser offenses, and yet they always have stiffer sentences, and all of those disparities, then a sense of nothingness, and again, that's philosophically called nihilism, can take hold of your mind and your soul. You stop caring about anything or thinking that anything good can happen. And so what we're really dealing with in many of our communities is the lack of tangible and intangible opportunities, education, recreation centers. I just left a meeting of clergy where we're dealing with a particular Baltimore City neighborhood, not too far from where the uprising occurred, where they're just food deserts. So it's so difficult to get fresh food. And so you're subjected to eating all of this fast food, because to get fresh food, you may have to take a bus and then do some serious walking, and you've worked already two jobs. So these things, if you have to take two or three buses to get to your job each way, and you've got issues of child care, then it makes sense that you might not be able to be as active in your child's life. So there are certainly questions about responsibility that we need to have, communities taking a hard internal gaze at themselves and saying, to be sure we need our parents to be more present. To be sure we need our faith communities to be more resolute and reaching out and more socially relevant. Yes, yes, yes. And we must realize that the system is stacked and has been for decades, if not centuries, against various communities. So one of the things that I'd like to say is that our imagination so often is so truncated that we don't believe that two things or three things can be true at the same time. So, for example, there are dozens of communities all throughout Baltimore, all kinds of neighborhoods that so appreciate the police. And we want to make a statement about over-policing, police brutality, and the need for more humane and community-oriented policing. Both of those things can be true at the same time. And some of us are committed to broadening the public discourse and not allow us to get stuck in this either-or that so truncates the public imagination and limits real opportunities for cross-cultural healing and understanding.
We're speaking tonight here on Counterpoint with Dr. Brad Braxton, senior and founding pastor of the Open Church, a progressive congregation in West Baltimore, Maryland. And Dr. Braxton,
yes.
as many of us have witnessed, the situation in Baltimore, where a very small group of people were responsible for the property destruction that occurred during the riots last Monday evening. And I think we all are aware that our corporate media focus, gratuitous attention on conflict and violence, the fires, the police and protesters wrestling in the streets. But beyond those images, which are broadcast around the world, what is it that people are not seeing on the media as far as a community response to those burned buildings? And what I've heard, it was some 200 small businesses that have been destroyed, at least temporarily, and
yes.
Are no longer able to open their doors. But what's been the community response that people in this country really don't see in the corporate media coverage of what's going on in Baltimore?
That's such a wonderful question. Thank you for that. I want to first say, and we've identified some of us, I think, three particular levels where there's so much positive, constructive, collaborative work going. And first, it is the work that has occurred and still is ongoing, and that is the work of de-escalation, right? Because it was a very tense situation, dangerous indeed situation. And the number of community-minded folks who just were out in the street in peaceful protest and not doing any looting or burning, but just wanted their bodies to be a positive witness, and were talking some folks down, literally de-escalating the circumstance. And the number of community-oriented prayer services and vigils and walks, this kind of, and, you know, there was a gentleman out using art and music and dance and just trying to use the best of our bodies and our poetic sensibilities to just bring the temperature down. And there was so much good work. There is so much good work going on at the de-escalation level. The second level that we're talking about is what many of us are calling compassion ministry. There was a beautiful story on one of our local television stations about a woman in the community, in that Sandtown community where the CVS was burned, who recognized that so many of our elders, the wise elders in that community, used that CVS for their prescription. And they have gone, many of those elders, without their various medications now for a week. And there was this positive story about using faith communities yesterday, and almost literally this woman going door to door to take people's prescriptions and say, wherever I have to go to get this prescription filled so that you can move towards wellness and wholeness. That's compassion ministry, getting people bottles of water, helping folks to have groceries, helping people to rebuild after, or at least to begin cleaning up the debris so that they can rebuild. Those things are happening all over the city, and it's a rainbow. So many different people, and people from different stripes and strata of society and age groups, and it's just been marvelous to watch. And I think the third element, so you've got the de-escalation work, the compassion ministries, and then third, and this is an area where the Open Church has done considerable work in these last couple of weeks, that is the long-term coalition building for the deep work of what we call soul repair. Because it's almost like, the community is in trauma. We have been traumatized, and people's souls there, and I don't mean anything necessarily, you know, existential and heavy, transcendental in terms of a faith claim, but just that essence of who we are as humans has been bruised, whether we watched it on the TV, whether we were down on the street doing de-escalation work, whether a member of our family is a police officer, whatever, people are just bruised. And in order to heal those deep contusions, we're going to need long-term sick coalitions. So one of the things, for example, the Open Church has been involved in is building an interfaith coalition, bringing together members of the Baha'i faith community, the Jewish community, the Muslim community, atheists and humanists, people who just have a profound respect for the dignity of the human spirit, whether or not they believe in God. As a Christian pastor, it is of little concern right now to me whether people believe in God. I just want folks who are committed to building up some spirits that have been broken, because in my estimation, that's where God is most present, where broken lives are being mended. So at all of those levels, de-escalation, compassion, and long-term coalition building across barriers, there's tremendous and inspiring work going on throughout the Baltimore community.
Dr. Brad Braxton is our guest tonight here on Counterpoint, senior and founding pastor of the Open Church, a progressive congregation in West Baltimore, Maryland. Dr. Braxton, as you look at the Black Lives Matter movement all across this country, which launched actions this past weekend called Black Spring, and certainly we've seen over the past months these videotapes that have emerged that have really graphically shown police violence targeting people of color and communities of color in general. I wonder, what kind of potential do you think this new movement has? Some are calling it the new civil rights movement of our era, that is really attracts a broad coalition of people of all races and creeds who seem to be attracted to its message of justice and fairness. What would you like to see? Or maybe I would put it better by saying, what do you believe the potential of this movement is for change?
There is tremendous potential if And I really want to underscore that if we have staying power and courage. By staying power, I mean many of us, as we've been strategizing and organizing, are already preparing for a natural phenomenon. And again, I don't say this with any disparagement, but we thank God for anybody who in any way is doing something positive to help broken communities receive healing. But inevitably, in any crisis, whether it's a natural catastrophe or a crisis like we're having in Baltimore, compassion fatigue will set in. So at some point, it's just overwhelming to people, and people sometimes shut down. And, you know, many of us are saying we wonder what will happen by the time we get to Labor Day, the end of the summer. The media moment will have passed, the lights are off on the cameras, and there'll be many of us left to do the deep and difficult work in anonymity under the shadows, which we're committed to doing. So we need staying power, I would say, first of all. So there's tremendous potential if we have staying power, and there's tremendous potential if we have courage. Courage, the ability to follow truth and justice and peace wherever they may lead, wherever the breadcrumbs are leading that might lead us to truth and justice and peace, we're going to follow them at great sacrifice. So that means the courage will be necessary to have the deep, deep conversations about the deep, deep inequities upon which the very American democracy is founded. So I shared with a group of rabbis last week, and I will say so proudly that the first call that I received when the uprising occurred was from a rabbinic colleague in the New York area. And I was so touched that she reached out to me with compassion and care, saying, how can we help? I spent a lot of time last week in very important Jewish coalitions that I have built and am building. And I said to these Jewish rabbinic colleagues, and I think that they appreciated my candor, that when I visited the Holocaust or Shoah Museum in Israel, Yad Vashem, years ago, it had a powerful effect on me as a testimony to genocide, the horrors of genocide that our Jewish brothers and sisters experienced. And at the same time, as I was at Yad Vashem, never ever was I impacted as I was there by the realization that in many quarters of the global society in which we live, black flesh is not as important as white flesh. It was actually as I was giving homage and testimony to the resiliency of another community that had experienced genocidal violence that I recognized that some communities have more of an ability to remember, even to remember those negative and horrific aspects of their past, so that those atrocities will never again be perpetrated. Other communities, and there's often a color scheme to this, other communities are told that your historical consciousness is illegitimate. I can't believe you're still reflecting on that Jim Crow thing, let alone that slavery thing that you went through. Get over it. And that happened to me as I was actually on a trip with fellow Jewish colleagues giving homage to their genocidal experience. So we need the courage to stop playing the game of one-upsmanship and valuing based on color and experience various people's experiences with genocide and have a robust conversation about the need to eradicate all forms of violence and genocidal terror against all God's children, irrespective of their color, the language they speak, or the zip code in which they live.
Well, Dr. Brad Braxton, that's a great way to leave this very important conversation. Lots more to explore here, but we're out of time, unfortunately. I'd love to have you back to track the work you're doing in Baltimore and to get to your perspectives on, you know, what needs to be done and how we all outside the city of Baltimore can help out. But we'll have to put that off for another time. But before you do say goodnight, tell us what your website is for the Open Church there.
I'd be happy. Thank you for that invitation. It's www.theopenchurchmd.org. as in Maryland, or as we like to say, medical doctor, because we're trying to heal, www.theopenchurchmd.org.
All right. Well, got it. Enjoyed our conversation, and a lot of hope in what you said and what you're doing and the people you work with. So thanks for being here, and we'll stay in touch.
I look forward to it. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Dr. Braxton. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Dr. Brad Braxton, senior and founding pastor of the Open Church, a progressive congregation in West Baltimore, Maryland, talking about the events in Baltimore over this past week with violence, property destruction, riots, peaceful protest, and apparently a lot of hope and a lot of building of interfaith coalitions to turn the corner there in Baltimore.